you see is ID here on either side, and we make up those tags. So these are specific tags for Morphbank. And so ID is obvious, but those IDs are then the IDs for these images. And what the search that I've conducted here in Morphbank was for one of our users, Richard Pyle. I wanted to see all the images in a collection that Richard had created, and I only want the IDs returned. And so this is what comes back to me, is a whole string of IDs. And on Morphbank, this is what that looks like. So this is the collection record that Richard created on Morphbank. And this is what it looks like when those IDs live on Morphbank and we show them through our web page. Now, by using and parsing that XML, what I can do is then embed those IDs on my own web page. Now, there's kind of a big gap between saying this or seeing this, looking at this, and then returning this. But how did I find out that information? I looked on Google. And on a, from one Google result and hit, and just a little bit of tinkering, the information, the tutorials, and actually the code to do that was already there. XML and a lot of these languages, even though it seems like a million miles away and can be very difficult if you just start approaching them, a lot of the code has already been written. A lot of the work has already been done. It's just problem solving to try to figure out how to employ it and do it and use it in your own work. The nifty thing about XML, too, that when Richard adds a new image to that collection, that image will then automatically appear on my web page. So it becomes dynamic at this point. So if you're searching, for example, and get an XML result for the lateral habitus images of bees that are found on Morphbank, and you create a web page that shows all the lateral habitus images of bees using Morphbank XML returns, then the next time somebody uploads a bee and that image is public, it'll pop up on your web page. So I want to talk about, there's a lot of projects that we're working with personally to try to develop this XML return software where we're feeding XML, exposing XML on public images to the world. The next step of this, of course, is now we're exposing it. What we really need to do is make the thing come around full circle and then take XML from other people to be able to upload images and image data to Morphbank. So we're working with a number of different projects. So Desamna Herbaria with the Plant Collections Project, who are using Google Base actually to database all of their image data, and then Morphbank to database all of their images. And then using Atom Feeds to talk back to each other is a really nice example. But another, I guess, pretty straightforward and clear example perhaps of how you can use Morphbank images and embed them in other projects. And at this point, it really becomes a workflow issue. If you can imagine, if you can return images, and you can return images by these IDs, and if you can imagine the project of how you want to organize your data using these two different things, with those two things as a result, pretty much it can be done, and the results can end up being very transparent. One example of this is MX. It's a managing taxonomic data tool coded by Matthew Yoder and Krishna Dole, Texas A&M, or used to be a Texas A&M. And in the MX system, you can add images to their server, but you can also link to Morphbank images. All of these images on this page are actually Morphbank images. They reside on the Morphbank server. They use that ID system in order to link the images or embed the images in MX. And so from this page, it looks very much similar to the browse page or the page we saw before with all of the fish, and you can see that it's a whole list of IDs and embedded images. But once the images are in the system, it takes that same length of morphbank.net/?id-and-image=unique-identifier, keeps the images in the entire system. So here it may be fairly obvious, but as you start moving into the system and moving through MX, where these images actually reside becomes less and less obvious. So these images, this is in a multi-key interface that can be created using the MX software. And these images were uploaded using MX, but they actually reside on the MorphBank server. And so in the background and behind all of this, those images have those unique IDs with MorphBank.net /, equals the ID. And the next step has been to make this, using the MorphBank recently exposed XML, to make this an even easier process where the person doesn't have to type in a unique ID to have it linked to the images, but instead they can type in a search. So in a Google-like search, they can type in a search for all the lateral habitus images of Apoidea, and what ends up happening is you get a series of thumbnails. And then you can decide whether or not you want to use that thumbnail throughout the entire system or use that image throughout the entire system because the program is looking at the XML that's behind that MorphBank is producing. So returning IDs, since we are an image database, it seems like the first no-brainer thing to do is return IDs that people can use in their images in their own web pages and link back to their images. But then the world can get a lot more complicated than that, because not only do we keep the IDs keep the images, but we also keep all the associated data with those images. So if you start looking and playing around with the XML, the exposure of the XML, and you start looking at the basic information that then is returned on Richard Pyle's image collection with just one record, you get something a lot more like this. But the important thing to realize that even though XML can start looking really complicated over and over again, is all it really is an image tag on one side, an image tag on another side, and in between is that data. So it's still the exact same format, now it just looks like a lot more text than it was before, and it can be parsed in the exact same manner. But you can get a lot more returns, you can get information about the images themselves, collection, location, events, et cetera, from the same, in the same similar manner. And that's all I have. A lot of people to thank. Time for one question. Anybody has a question? Yeah.
So if I'm a third-party user on this key that's somewhere else, away from MorphBank, and I'm curious about where that image came from, can I get that information?
Well, a lot of times you can have the links that go back to the original image records, and sometimes it's also exposed if you, mouse click on the image or whatever and copy the path, then you can see where the path is, where it originally existed or came from. But no, it can be really transparent too, which you actually have no idea what's that the database that's housing the image. To begin with. So what is BugScope? It is a web-based remote access scanning electron microscopy. It happens during sessions, during which participants actually drive the scope, which is located in Urbana, and they drive it from their classroom all over the world, and at the same time they have a real-time chat with the bug ops, that's the BugScope team members. So you all may remember a similar talk that was given by one of my co-authors in Montreal, but a lot has happened since then, and I'm happy to be able to give you some updates. So with apologies to Ira Glass, our talk today comes in three acts. First, I will talk about the origins of BugScope, then I'm going to talk about what BugScope's like today, and then I'm going to talk about what's in it for us, what's in it for entomologists, and why should we care? So BugScope started with is rooted in this idea of a what if of the worldwide laboratory proposed by these and other authors. What if we could really do this? What if we could take expensive research grade equipment that actual scientists are actually using and make it accessible to kids? What if we could do this? It was not only this educational outlook, but it was also the idea of some kind of hotshot programmer types that wanted to see what kind of net pyrotechnics they could do with this remote access model. They wanted to do crazy things, but that's neither here nor there. So the problem is, how do we scale and sustain a remote access scientific instrumentation project? There's essentially three criteria that it comes down to. It has to be practical. Whatever format, whatever sessions, specimens you're using, they have to be easy to prep. They can't require special equipment or weird consumables that you can't get, or you have to have a special holder. It can't do any of that stuff. Second, it has to be sustainable. It can't be cost prohibitive. And you have to be able to have multiple sessions in a given period of time. And also, you still have to make this equipment available for researchers. And last, and maybe one of the most important things for what we do is